Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I welcome to the show Maureen Metcalf. Now, Maureen is the founder, CEO, and board chair of the Innovative Leadership Institute. She's a highly sought-after expert in anticipating and leveraging future business trends, and she helps leaders elevate the quality of their leadership and transform their organizations to create sustainable impact and results. Now, Maureen has captured her 30 years of experience and success in an award-winning series of books, one of which is on my desk right now. And these books are used by public, private, and academic organizations to align company-wide strategies, systems, and culture with innovative leadership technologies. We're going to be talking a lot about leadership today. She is also a fellow with the International Leadership Association and is a strengths performance coach. And we're going to be discussing leadership mindsets. They're very important right now. And what we were just talking about in my virtual green room, very trying times. So Maureen, good morning. Welcome to the show. And thank you, by the way, for sending me your book, Innovative Leader's Guide. I have it on my desk.
Thank you, Denise. It's a pleasure to be here. And I really appreciate you and your listeners making time today, especially in the midst of a crisis, as we're all trying to rethink and innovate what we do and how we do it.
And it's so important. And, you know, I mentioned my virtual green room, which basically for those listening is, what is your green room? We talk a little bit, my guest and I chat a little bit before we go live. And I mentioned to you, and I'll mention it to the show as well, the audience, I try to keep my, you know, all of my episodes evergreen so they can be listened to many years down the road, as many of them are. I mean, I've got some that are 8, 9, 10 years old. People are still going, I just found this episode, and oh my gosh, it was so great. But the thing is, this is never going to go away, is it? Things have changed, and we have to innovate. We have to do things differently. We have to think differently. And that's why I'm so glad you're here today.
Thank you. And to build on that, the idea that leaders need to innovate or update how they lead, and this has always been true, and yet at this moment in time, we've just seen an acceleration of what leaders need, the changes leaders need to make. And the thing I hear from everyone, and I believe to be true, is many of these gains were positioned anyway, things like telemedicine. And we have the opportunity to kind of cultivate the gains we've made and improve significant areas of our society, access to medicine being one of them.
I agree. And, you know, it's just, it's very interesting to me because right now, I mean, I've spend a lot of time on social media anyway because I'm social media manager for myself, for my clients. And I'm telling you, I do not understand, and millions of people along with me, apparently, that may be an exaggeration, but a lot of people are saying, why can't I get my dog groomed? This is ridiculous. And it is. It really is. You know, my groomer just opened up a couple of weeks ago, and she came to the car, got my dog on the leash, and we're not allowed in. It's, I don't understand a lot of what's going on. But then we have telemedicine. So there's this huge gap on where we can innovate and what we're allowed. And boy, I hate that word. We're Americans. We shouldn't have to be allowed to do anything. But here we are. And I rambled a bit, though. So is there anything you can pick out of that? I listened to myself. What the heck?
The thing that stands out for me is with any crisis, there's an opportunity. And with a catastrophe, there's the opportunity for evolutionary change. I think we will continue to innovate kind of small and steady, but I think we can make some evolutionary changes that really will impact a significant portion of our society. So while people are dying and people are suffering, the unemployment rate is significantly higher, and I don't remember the numbers exactly, and I want to acknowledge the pain that's happening, but I also want to encourage people, because the rest of us are continuing to make a living, do the things we're passionate about, and how do we cultivate the opportunity that is happening at this unique point in time?
I agree with you. And you know what I'm noticing, Maureen? A lot of people are being a lot more upfront about how they can help you, genuinely help you. You know, courses are being created that are free. I'm creating one myself right now. Not a penny is going to be charged ever for this thing. A lot of that is going on. People are jumping all over Facebook and saying, listen, is there any way I can actually assist you? Can I help you? Do you just need a friendly ear? That's kind of new. I mean, there have always been entrepreneurs, solopreneurs. I mean, it's our job to help other people. But now we're getting out there really in front of it and going, listen, how can we help? Truly, how can we help? And I like that. I'm seeing an awful lot of it. And I'm very proud of people who are jumping out and saying, ask us questions. You know, we've been there. We've done it. We've worked virtually. We've worked from home. We can help you. Schedule a call with me. There's not any charge for it. Just ask us.
Well, and Denise, that's what your podcasts do, right? Is you create the opportunity to share amazing content completely free of charge to your listeners.
True. I hadn't thought of it like that, but yeah, you're right. Thank you. I mean, that just made me go, ooh. I had no idea. But it really is. So when you say evolution and you're saying evolve, let's really go and drill down on that, because this is a really important time not to panic, which, you know, that's the natural thing. Oh my God, you know, I just lost my job. Oh my gosh, I can't go grocery shopping. Oh my God. It just, we're in fight or flight now, it seems like. So how do we evolve away from that? How do we calm ourselves and focus? Because focus is a big issue right now for me anyway. How about you? Are you having trouble focusing?
You know, I have moments of concern, certainly, as everyone does, especially as the person running a small business. Our revenues have dropped significantly, and we need to figure out how to pay the bills, like many people are trying to figure out. And yet, there is so much in my life that really does work. This creates a window to build new content, to drill deeper on some of my writing. I've got a book in process, and I get to do more research now, and I've got the time for that. So there is, I think, a space to evolve my own thinking and my work, where when I was busier, I may not have been able to invest that amount of time. I still need to figure out how to make up the revenue, right? So both are at play. And for the large percentage of the population who is still employed, the question for us is, how do we find, one, the good, because everyone's stressed. You know, people working from home, it is different. It's not as smooth, right? I knew how to walk down the hall and go to a meeting, but now my Zoom doesn't always work, or, you know, I think we've all had issues with technology. And that causes our physiology, our cortisol level and our adrenaline level to spike. And we need to find ways to manage our physiology so that we can take advantage of the opportunities that are happening in this crisis.
Do you have any suggestions? You know, what people can, I do a lot of deep breathing. I've tried meditation. It doesn't work for me, truly. I either start building my Thanksgiving, you know, grocery list in July, Or I fall over and I drool. Meditation is not for me unless I'm walking the dog. Then I fall into a walking meditation. But what do you suggest people just stand back, take a breath, and say, hey, I got this?
Okay, so the first thing to understand is our brains are wired to keep us alive. So they are continually scanning for risk, and they amplify that risk so that it comes to our forefront of our attention. So our stress level is higher for many of us because our brain is on overdrive trying to make sure that we are safe during a time that's a bit uncharted. And I have done a lot of work remotely, and for me it's still stressful as well because things just aren't working as smoothly, and my reputation is about delivering impeccably. So I think we're all facing the physiological. So the first step is acknowledge that I am in a more stressful situation than normal. I do a lot of mindfulness focus, so being aware of what's happening in my body, the tension level, the stress level, and then I do come back to breathing. I come back to gratitude. Most of my life is really darn good, all things considered, right? So what can I be grateful about? You know, I'm looking outside my window right now and the garden's blooming. It's early spring in Ohio. There are lots of things that are good. And by bringing our focus back to what we're grateful for, again, our physiology kicks in and the cortisol releases in our, or not cortisol, sorry, oxytocin releases in our brain. So we're counterbalancing the chemical response of our body. And I am also a walking meditation person. I'm not so good at sitting quietly sometimes, but I do a lot of walking, and it allows me to have a much higher level of clarity.
And see, now you're speaking my language. To me, gratitude is the one, maybe it's not the one, but for me, it's the one major thing that I must do in order to ground myself, in order to just say, okay, you know, that website did not launch an hour ago. Okay, calm down. Go outside. You know, dig your toes into the ground. Get under the pecan trees. Take a deep breath. Be very, very grateful. Practice massive gratitude. And like you say, then go back and say, okay, I'm feeling much better now. I'm not dead. You know, my car is not being towed off because I didn't pay for it. It's all good. Here we go. So that's tremendous advice.
And it actually liberates the parts of our brain, the executive function, that are able to think more clearly. You know, the other, for people who have pets, I'm sitting here petting my dog. That soothes me in a way that not much else does. That there's a tactile piece of being in physical contact with something other than my keyboard, which is the thing that gets most of my attention during the day.
Oh, same here. You know, I have feline office assistants, and when you said dog, I took a quick glance over to my right. My dog's bed is in here. This is actually her bedroom. It's my office, but she thinks it's her bedroom. So we're all together all the time, but I agree with you. So how does this, I mean, we need to talk about leadership, there's no question, but what do we, we're in huge disruption. The whole world is in disruption. I'm not, in my lifetime, at any rate, I've not seen this. I've read about it. I love history. I understand my history. But when you're reading about it and even watching something about it, it's not the same as experiencing it. And we're experiencing it. So, but one of the things that you talk about a lot is leadership mindsets successfully navigating disruption. So let's go down some of your favorite points. One of the things that you've said, and I love, is the world is changing quickly. Don't be the flip tone of leadership. And I crack up every time I see that. So let's talk about that.
Okay, so a few things. Many of the leaders I work with are experts in their field, and they stay current on the thing. So there are physicians who stay current on changes in medical practices. There are technologists who stay current on technology, or engineers that stay current on engineering. Many leaders fail to stay current on the field of leadership in the same way they do about the products they sell. So many leaders invest time, the very limited time they have. You know, if we think about folks working many 12, 14, 16 hours a day on a regular basis, and some of them 6 and 7 days a week, there's precious little time to do learning about anything. And then we talk about, you know, so how do we stay current as leaders? If, especially as an executive, most of what I do is leading, not my technical area of expertise, but many leaders haven't even thought about the idea that their leadership skills depreciate just like their technology does. And so if my mindset is outdated, then I am going to be less effective as a leader, even if I'm staying current about the technology I use. So I think that is one of the biggest points, is to shift our focus as leaders and recognize that our leadership skills are the biggest thing we bring to this job, and how we do that impacts the lives of all of our stakeholders, whether they're employees or customers or financiers or the community.
You know, that's the second time this week I've heard the word stakeholders. And there's a reason for that, apparently. So when you say stakeholders, what does that mean to you?
So as a leader, I am leading the people who follow me. But we are doing that in service of the clients who pay for us, our partners who help us deliver services, our suppliers, people in our supply chain, the people who give us their money so we can finance us, and the community that supports us through everything from roads to public services. All of those people count on us doing our work well and as effectively and ethically as possible.
Perfect. And that's exactly what was it. I'm actually writing a bio for somebody, and he kept using the word stakeholders, and I kept saying, I don't think I really understand. So we went deeper into it, and then you just kind of clarified what he explained to me. I was like, well, that's interesting. How did I not know that? But that goes back to leadership, doesn't it? We don't know what we don't know.
Well, and how we think of leadership and the role of a leader is evolving. So people like Jamie Dimon are coming out now and saying, our job as executives is more than just to make a profit. And that's what traditional corporate charters say, is I'm supposed to return as much profit to my investors as possible. And now these same leaders are saying, we really need to expand that to look at the broader community and our impact. If I am returning a lot of money to stockholders, but mistreating my employees, that one, financially, that will have an impact longer term. But there's also, if we broaden the definition of ethics and integrity, isn't it my responsibility to act ethically in all of my interactions? And is ethical defined by paying a living wage? Yeah, so how do we really date how we think about these really sticky situations?
No kidding. And, you know, of course, HR, human resources, that's got to change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's got to be undergoing a huge mind shift right now. And people are working from home. Let me ask you this, because I've been thinking about this a lot. A lot of people are working from home. I think a lot, this is just me thinking. I don't have any data to support mm-hmm. this. It's just me going, But it occurs to me that a lot of these businesses may not bring their people back into cubicles, or, you know, they may just say, look, this is really working. Let's not have the expensive, you know, having to house you in cubicles or offices. You don't need the expensive, you know, having to go to the dry cleaners and Starbucks every 10 minutes. You know, let's explore this and see how it works. And again, I have no data to support that. It's just me thinking out loud. But that leads me to my next question about leadership, because I'm thinking, much like many, many parents are finding out that their little darlings are kind of little jerks, that a lot of people, I'm sorry if I offended anybody, but you know, a lot of kids are just, you have to wonder what their parents are really doing with them. But here's the thing, I think a lot of, again, no data to support this, it's pure conjecture, that a lot of employers, because they now have to communicate, managers, employers, all of them, they have to communicate very, very differently with a work at home kind of crowd now. And I think they're finding out who can do what, who needs help, who needs guidance, who needs more training, who probably needs to be fired at the end of all this. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. I facilitate a CEO group or an executive group, and that was part of the conversation last night. Is one of our gentlemen was saying, you know, some of the people who work hard, they're going to work hard no matter what. Now some people may need additional training and those things, and absolutely true. We're working in a different context. The people who were problem employees in the office, they're more likely to be your problem employees when they're not in the office.
Exactly.
So if you had management issues, they don't go away when people start working from home. They amplify in some cases. So,
and this is where you innovate and you find ways to manage them, make ways to communicate, ways to get them all working together. I mean, this is a whole different thing.
It is a whole different thing. And some of the basic management issues that were present when we were in the office, but we could navigate them because the person sitting next to someone helped them out, or it was going well enough that I didn't want to rock the boat and make the changes. Now that we're looking at, in many cases, reduced revenue, our underperformers are still underperforming, and it may be more visible now. And the need to address it with tighter budgets, folks who were not performing well, in many cases, that it is more visible. So now we have to figure out, are they not performing well because they're a bad fit, because we're not training them properly, or is it a motivation issue? And we have to sort that out and deal with it. And some of this is really stuff we should have done before anyway.
I agree. But this just, you know, sets that bright light on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I'm thinking too, again, just thinking, is that, you know, I work at my own rhythm. You do too. A lot of solopreneurs, we do. You know, we may wake up in the morning, hit that floor running, go, let's kick butt. About 2 o'clock for me, I'm done. I'm just, I can't do any more. So I'm back outside. You know, I'm digging holes. I'm doing something. Mm-hmm. And then I find, I'm thinking. The whole time I'm thinking, I'm making notes. Mm-hmm. I might be reading something important or listening to a course that I'm either building or that I have, you know, invested in. But about 7 o'clock at night, and I don't know why, and I finally figured out that I work in chunks. About 7 o'clock at night, I am right back to where I was in the morning. Let's go. Let's kick butt. And I may work until 11 o'clock at night, but my mindset is there and I'm working really, really well. And I'm thinking that a lot of employers now are finding out that, you know, maybe some of their best employees, their highly motivated people are going to work when they want to work. They're going to get it done, but it's not going to be 8 to 5 anymore, is it?
Well, and it never worked. If we think about the reason we're in offices in this way, goes back to the Industrial Revolution and the idea that at that moment in history, so over the course of human history, we didn't go to factories and jobs. People worked on farms. They worked according to a more natural rhythm. And then we evolved to the point where everyone had to go to a factory and they were running machines. So they had to be in a place running a machine or working together in a certain way. Now that we've moved beyond, in many cases, right? So if I work at McDonald's and I'm cooking fries, I still have to be at McDonald's cooking fries. But
sure.
For many of us, we are not doing that. And it was not natural anyway. And it did suppress people's ability to connect to when they are most effective. So for some folks, it's not till 11 in the morning. And they get up, they're homeschooling their kids now. They have to focus on other things. And to your point, high performers are going to get this stuff done, but it won't look like the what we have now come to call the standard work hours.
Exactly, and you condensed that beautifully. That's where I was trying to get.
Thank you.
Couldn't quite make it. But I wonder about the role of leaders right now. They're saying, look, because a lot of them may be in that, look, we need you here at 8 o'clock, not 8:10. We need you, hour lunch, whatever it is, and you can clock out at 5. What's happening with that tunnel vision? I hope to goodness they're able to say, we got it. We can identify who is really doing well, what time they're doing well, how quickly they're getting everything done. So, again, this is just me wondering, are leaders really good leaders going, I have to work with them where they live. I need to find out how to make this work.
Well, and that has been happening anyway in pockets. So if we think about the startup high-tech folks, they work differently. And so if we take the learning from that group, and again, there are a lot of people who can't do this, right? If you have a job that requires you to face the public, like in retail, you've got to be there. But for many people, companies have found that attracting and retaining, and this is, back to a couple months ago when we had a labor shortage, attracting and retaining the best people, many of them are no longer, if they have competing job offers, they don't have to take the one that requires them to go sit in an office. They can take the one that allows them to work from home, work more flexible hours, more casual. Like, why do we wear suits, or many people don't anymore, but why do we have that dress code? And again, I realize that people in cutoff shorts and things may not be appropriate in a business setting, but we have a lot of restrictions that are carryovers from a different era that we can now rethink. And I think we will have to rethink to get the greatest benefit from the pandemic.
I agree.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I've been noticing the same thing. A lot of people, it started with Zappos, I think, some years ago. Zappos just said, look, we're going to do everything different. They set up, basically how you bought shoes. They turned it on your head. I love Zappos. Zappos and Nordstrom's, you ought to see my closet. It looks like Nordstrom's threw up in there. Now they're going bankrupt, which breaks my heart. But Nordstrom's, they just, a couple days ago, they declared bankruptcy. They're the first, giant retailer to do that. So hopefully they'll be able to come out of it, but that's what's happening. So let's talk about, because everything's changing. Everything is changing, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. And that's where we go to mindset. Your mindset and your behaviors can lead to greater success, whether it's greater organizational success, whether it's personal success. You have to look at how you're thinking about things and how you're responding to things and how much of a servant heart you have. How are you helping people? How are you assisting people? Are you part of the problem? Or are you going, hey, we got this. Yeah, this is different. We don't really like it a whole lot, but you know what? I just had a great idea. So let's talk about mindsets and behaviors a bit.
Perfect. So we have a list of 7 mindsets. And they're associated with from the research, what is written in Harvard Business Review article by Torbert and Brooke, they talk about the 7 transformations of leadership. And basically, it takes a developmental model, just like we think about young kids. You've got the terrible twos and you've got, you know, the next stage. And there are predictable stages young people go through as they mature. The same is true of leaders. And again, there's a lot of significant body of research. And the folks I'm connected to are people like Suzanne Cook-Reuter, who did her doctoral work at Harvard. And the reason I say that is it's academically validated. It is there is research to prove the efficacy of these theories. So we have taken now the level that is believed to be the most effective at managing and running large complex organizations and distilled 7 mindsets and behaviors that are required. And by the way, these are the mindsets that allow people to thrive in times of chaos and disruption. This isn't required in steady state. It's still helpful. But in times like this, these are when the strategist mindsets and behaviors really do set apart significantly people who are wildly successful versus those that are falling behind.
So there's 7 of these?
There are. So let me run through them just at a high level. I'll give you the list, and then we can focus on whatever you are most interested in.
Yeah, because we've got about 30 minutes, and I'd love to get through all of them because this is really, really important.
Okay, so the first is professionally humble, and that's committed to the organization's mission and values. So in a time of disruption, what are we here to do at a macro level? So my organization is committed to elevating the quality of leadership across the world. How we do it will change, but what we do and the values we hold will help us as our North Star when we're making decisions we haven't had to make before. The second is unwavering commitment to right action. So this is unstoppable and unflappable when I'm focused on my mission. So again, we just had a big disruption. My mission is elevating the quality of leadership. I have to be fully committed and fully focused on delivering that mission. I have to have the ability to stay the course when it feels bad, under pressure, as things unwind. I can't lose focus because then I'm not meeting the needs of my stakeholders. So then the third one is 360-degree thinker. So using different terminology, I'm a systems thinker. I understand who my stakeholders are. I understand what they need, and I am able to recalibrate because I so deeply understand the system that I can shift my focus to attend to changing stakeholder needs. The fourth is intellectually curious and versatile. So this is an interesting time. Again, we talk about the systems and what variables impact my stakeholders, my industry, my employees, my communities. I have to understand how things are evolving. So I need to understand some of the bigger political levers right now. I need to understand what's happening with the World Health Organization, things I never imagined I would have to at least be aware of. I need to be aware of what's happening with supply chain disruption because I have clients who are dramatically impacted when they can't get the supplies they need to deliver their services. So then the fifth is highly authentic and reflective. So there's the cognitive piece of being a leader, and then there's the more self-aware and emotional. So we talked about things like gratitude and reflection, that I am able to understand myself as the vehicle delivering leadership. So if I am out of whack, the decisions I make are going to be suboptimal, and the interactions I have with the people who are delivering frontline services can be tainted if I yell at somebody because I'm frustrated, or if I withhold information because I don't want to deal with the conflict. All of that stuff that is related to me as a human being, I need to be highly aware of what's going on inside of me. I need to manage it, and I need to be willing to ask for feedback even when I'm going to hear answers I really don't want. The sixth is inspiring followership. I connect with people at all levels of the organization, and I inspire them to deliver their best work. So I have the ability to use humor. I'm able to diffuse conflict. I understand the difficulty that I'm, again, use the pandemic. We are asking people to perform things they're uncomfortable with, not delivering medical treatment through telemedicine. For some people, that isn't what they were trained for, and they want to make sure that they're not adversely impacting someone's health because they can't notice how their body moves when they walk in the room. So what am I going to miss when I'm on the phone or when I'm on Zoom that I would not miss in person? So as a leader, I need to help people make those shifts that are uncomfortable. And then the last is innately collaborative. I welcome input from different people and different points of view. And this is an interesting one for leaders, especially because to be ultimately effective, I need to seek out people who see the world differently than I do. And I need to find the value in things that I might have disagreed with and integrate that into a broader solution. So again, using the pandemic as an example, we're facing challenges that many of us haven't faced in our business environment or our personal environment. And I need to look at what people are doing that I might not have held out as a person that I would associate with on a regular basis. But I need to seek them out because they see the world differently. And it is that difference that helps me find my blind spots and create a better outcome than if I just sought the input from people who were like me and saw the world like me.
And
so
that one,
how's that landing for you?
I'm scribbling. I am scribbling notes.
Okay.
I can't even read them. I have so many questions. But the one that you just mentioned, you know, and we see this on social media. We see it in families. We see it like, look, you're a Democrat. I'm a liberal. I'm a socialist. Whatever. I don't care
mm-hmm.
what you are. You treat me nice, I'll treat you nice back. But mm-hmm. here's the thing. A lot of on social media in particular, because it's just so out there in your face, are starting these god-awful fights. They're saying terrible things to one another that, honestly, Maureen, if somebody spoke to me, I've read some of these things out loud to myself just to see what they sound like, what they taste like. And honestly, if somebody spoke to me the way some of these people with their keyboards and their anger and hostility, mm-hmm. if they did that to me in public, I'd knock the crap out of them. I would turn around and probably belt them right in the nose.
I wouldn't do that because I'd be afraid they'd hit me back.
Oh, but no, I can run. I'm quick. Get out of there.
You know, especially now, people are struggling. And, you know, I think of all of us having said things that were silly. One of my friends years ago was the CEO, and we were having wine and cheese and crackers. And he looked at the box of Stone's wheat crackers I wonder where they get the stones to make the crackers with. This is a really smart man. When he stepped back, clearly he did not think they were taking the gravel from the parking lot and putting it into crackers, right? we all say things that we just haven't completely thought through.
Oh, all the time. Yeah. Right? But some are just vicious, and that needs to back. They need to back that up.
Well, and that's where what I'm trying to say is we need to demonstrate a level of grace. You know, if someone says something stupid, laugh. Don't assault them. It's not going to do any good. Assaulting people on social media, I don't think, at least for me, that's not how I get the outcomes I'm looking for.
No, and that's just it. And like you, I mean, I have my own beliefs about everything, not just one or two big things, everything. We all do. And sometimes somebody will say or do something that I'm like, what? And I'll walk away from it and I'll think about it and I'll cogitate a bit and go, I don't understand that. Let me ask some questions. And it'll turn out almost 100% of the time that whoever said that actually thinks a lot of the same ways that I do. They just opened their mouth and something came out that didn't make sense to me. Don't cut people dead. Don't, you know, unfollow them, unfriend them, unless it's really egregious. Then you go, I'm not tolerating this. But sometimes just ask the question, say, you know, where did that come from? What does that mean to you? And then you find out that you can actually be friends after all. And I think that's part of leadership, isn't it? You can't just say, no, I told you to do this, that, and the other, and you didn't do it. Come to my office. We can't do that anymore.
Those days are done. And there are people in my life that I respect greatly on some areas. So I have a colleague, our political views are very different. And the agreement is we just don't talk politics. It doesn't mean she's not brilliant in other areas. It just, we find where the value is, we focus on that, and we de-emphasize the other stuff.
Perfect. That's where I was trying to get. So when you talk about the mindsets, they're all terrific. I wrote down 4 and then 5, and then I wrote down something about 7. I was just scribbling all over the place. And I can just about hear people going, well, I can do that one. I've got the, I think I missed 4 of them, you know, in my little self-assessment. But these things can be taught or at least encouraged, can't they?
Absolutely. So we talk about both mindsets and behaviors, and here's the distinction. We can all think of a politician as an example who says all the right things on stage, and then they go back and their mic's still on, and they say something completely the opposite. So they don't have the mindset, in some cases, of humility and being gracious, but they have the behavior. So if I'm not there with my mindset, if I'm not humble, at least try to be humble, right? Act in a way that gives credit to other people. And certainly there are times I don't have the feeling of wanting to be humble. I want to get credit for something. I've worked really hard on it. I'm proud of it. Wouldn't it be nice to be acknowledged? But the right thing to do is give credit to everyone who participated. And so whether or not I have the feeling of it, I can understand the list of behaviors and do my best to follow the list. Over time, even just doing that will help shift the mindset. They can be taught.
I was pretty sure that could be taught because, listen, when I was younger, I was about the most arrogant little brat you ever met. I mean, I couldn't even stand myself half the time. And I don't even know how my mother didn't just tie me to a railroad track and leave me there. Seriously, I was not a pleasant kid, as a teenager anyway. And over time, I had to learn exactly the 7 things that you're talking about. And I still struggle with some of them sometimes. I mean, I completely understand what you're saying, because when you started naming them, I need some work on that one. Oh, you know, I did that one yesterday. I'll work on that one tomorrow or something. But, you know, our mindsets and our behaviors, you do learn, and you learn from other people. You can't just stay focused on what it is that you're thinking, what you're doing, how you're behaving. You do learn from other people. And years ago, and I was going somewhere with that, and I just found my trail. Years ago, I remember somebody telling me, Denise, you lead by example, not by exhorting people. And I went, what? Mm-hmm. What do you mean I can't be? I'm bossy by nature. I'm the oldest of a bunch of kids. I'm bossy. But I said, what do you mean lead by example? And then I started paying attention. I went, oh, okay. It took a while, but it sunk in.
So the thing I hear from you most is the highly authentic and reflective. So you're paying attention to what you did, how people respond, and you're continuing to refine. And that's one of the most important skills in actually changing, right? If I'm not paying attention and accepting feedback, then I'm not likely to be able to grow. But as long as I have that skill of identifying feedback and a true desire to get better, and that means I have to change and take the difficult steps of looking in the mirror and seeing the things like that you saw, like, ooh, that behavior was pretty unattractive.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. Yeah, it wasn't pretty at all. But that doesn't mean, and I have to say this, doesn't mean I'm not going to stomp around and have a hissy fit. I am going to stomp around and have a hissy fit quietly, all by myself. But once I get past, because it's fun. Sometimes, I don't know about you, when I decide to just have a full-blown mind melt, I give myself a half hour. I'm going to have a nervous breakdown. I schedule it. And 5 minutes later, I'm laughing at myself because I'm so ridiculous. I mean, truly. But I still have a half hour so that I can go, you know, do laundry or something with that other 15 or 20 minutes. But you do have to just sit back and go, you know, he just kicked me in the teeth. Did I have that coming? Well, yes and no. What am I going to accept? What am I going to fight back with? And what am I going to change? If you don't have that, you're not going to make any changes.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the point. And for leaders to truly develop, that I think that is the one first skill, right, is I'm going to pay attention and make the commitment. And so that ties to humility. I have to believe that there's actually something I need to change, right? If I think I'm perfect, then I shouldn't be worried about leadership development.
Why do people want to be leaders? Is it innate in us? Is it something that we just automatically do? Do we have to say, I'm going to be a leader and then go study? I mean, how does this happen?
So two things. One, I'm a big fan of studying. There are some people who are certainly more innate as leaders. There are some who are really good leaders, but they've worked hard. And most people, you know, I was talking to someone the other day and the example of some of the leadership training programs. You go for a couple hours, you sit in the classroom, and you're expected to be good when you leave. So I would equate that to going to a movie. How, if you're an athlete and you go watch a golf match, or you watch a Van Damme movie or a Kung Fu movie, you're not better significantly at playing golf or doing karate by watching someone do it. You have to practice it. So for leaders who want to be experts at the craft of leadership, we need to do it. And like any new parts of skills, it's hard. And we do it poorly before we do it well. So why do we want to do it? I think our society holds out leaders as important or special, like we do doctors and lawyers and other professions, and we pay them more. So often folks want to get the promotion to support their families, and the way companies structure the pay is leaders get more. I don't think everyone should be a leader.
No, nor do I.
In a professional setting. But the exact opposite of that is I think everyone leads in some place in their life.
They really do. And let's go ahead, and I agree with you 100% on that. Let's talk about EQ versus IQ, because I think that's an important distinction. And some people are just simply not emotionally all that intelligent. They have tunnel vision. They may, as you noted earlier, they may be absolutely tops at what it is that they're doing, but they don't really connect with the people around them, which I think is a big failure. I really do.
I agree. And, you know, again, back to the industrial era, when I started working a long time ago, there were people who would kind of sit in their office and they'd crunch numbers. They were quants, or they would be technology developers, and they kind of worked alone, that or more alone. That is much less common now, as we have kind of cross-functional teams. Everyone works with other people. And so everyone needs some emotional intelligence. And again, it's something to be developed. Some people may be born with more of it, but it can absolutely be developed. And to be optimally effective, it needs to be. Whether you're a leader or not a leader, some level of ability to be kind to people, be aware of your feelings and how they show up in your behavior. We even expect kids to do that, right? If I want something from you, I can't come over to your house, hit you over the head, and take your stuff.
That would be a bad idea.
We would call me then a criminal.
I'd call you a lot of things, but yeah.
We don't do it as overtly as adults. But we still demonstrate behaviors where, if I'm disappointed, your example of spewing on social media, that's emotionally not very intelligent and not very effective.
It really isn't. No, it has the opposite effect. People will go, ooh. They, you know, all of a sudden, people that you kind of admired yourself, and maybe you were doing a bit of work together, maybe you were referring that each other, you're going to find very quickly that dries up. That's just gone. And you're not going to get it back.
Mm-mm. No.
You know, here's the thing about keyboard warriors. Don't. Just don't. If you've got, remember when our grandmothers would say, honey, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Treat your keyboard the same way. Keep your fingers off of it. If your mouth is going to lead you into trouble, your fingers are going to lead you into trouble that you can't get out of. It's just don't be ugly out there. This is not a good time to be ugly. You can be opinionated all day long. Talk to your dog. Talk to yourself.
Yeah.
And then listen to yourself. And if you think, oh, if somebody said that to me, what would my reaction be? How about if you sit down and go, let's find a better way of, you know, conversing with myself and with the world.
Well, the other thing that I think people don't always consider when they type something in Facebook or Twitter or wherever is there is a long-term record of that.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We're in a period of time where tensions are high. It's one thing to have a conversation with a neighbor that's heated, that you're only in, it's a one-to-one or one-to-a-few. This is public record potentially forever. What do you want people to remember you for?
That's exactly right. And I'm going to go back to talk to yourself. Maybe not talk to yourself, listen to yourself. You know, we are the worst about being really ugly to ourselves, right? All humans do it. That's just how we're crafted. And it took me a long time to say, what did you just say to yourself? Sit down and shut up. I mean, really. And, you know, sometimes you just have to, if you want to develop that emotional intelligence, if you want to be a leader, you cannot be beating up on yourself and you cannot be beating up on anybody else. You have to find compassion.
Yeah.
You have to find understanding. You have to be available. Goes back to that kind of servant leadership, which I'll be honest with you, it took me the longest kind of time to figure out what that was. You know, we have to be a lot more open to everything that's coming our way and find our way to navigate it.
So let's go back to the mindset, that idea that I'm committed to right action. So if I tie my values to that, my values say I treat people with compassion. I'm kind. Now, which may mean in some cases I just don't speak. Or I find a way to say politely, I have a different point of view. Or just this conversation isn't helpful. I need to exit. If those are my values, then I need to consistently demonstrate. It doesn't mean I get walked over. It doesn't mean I get railroaded into participating in things I think are opposed to my views. I have to find ways to extract myself.
Well, in the Deep South, we just say, bless your heart. And everybody knows what that means. If somebody says in a drawling voice, oh, bless your little, and if they say, bless your little heart, that means we think you're too stupid and it'll never wash off. It's not nice. But we didn't yell at you. Okay, so let's, I just lost my marbles there. Leadership. We've been talking about innovative leadership techniques. Is there anything else that you want? We've only got about 4 or 5 minutes. Is there anything else you wanted to share with the audience that is really at top of your mind right now as we watch the world just kind of go, changing, everybody get on board?
You know, the thing I would encourage, I talked about compassion. We are at a point in time where people's stress is high. They're navigating challenges they never thought they'd have to navigate. Everyone's got something that is difficult for them, some more than others, right? If you're making decisions between food and medicine, that's one set of challenges that is incredibly complex. Other people are navigating, my mom's in a nursing home with Alzheimer's, so we're...
I'm sorry.
I'm concerned about her health in close proximity to people who are dying of COVID-19. We all have something. So my invitation is, as we look at every single person we interact with, see them as the precious person that somebody sees them as, right? That they are here on this earth for a reason, and it is only through working together that we can all give our best. So how do we lift one another up and demonstrate the grace and kindness as a leader? If I can do nothing but acknowledge the talent that people who work with me have, that's why we pay them, and create a space for them to do their best. And again, that's not accepting bad behavior. I have to address those things. But especially while people are just under such stress, how do we find the goodness, find the kindness, and encourage and make the space for people to do what they're best at?
That's lovely. Thank you. And listen, within organizations, whether it's a small one like mine, I work alone, I live alone, but I have a terrific team. They're scattered all over the place. Things, even with them, have changed because now I have to be a lot more aware of, you know, where they're located. Are they in a danger zone? Yeah, I'm in Southwest Louisiana. I was, you know, thinking, oh, we don't have any trouble here. And then I realized, oh, yeah, we do. We had New Orleans. You know, we had Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. It's 100 miles away. I don't care. But I went, oh, I better care. I better care pretty quickly. So, you know, this is a good time, even if your team is remote by design, as mine is, or now your team is remote because they had to go remote, this is a really good time, I would think, to get to know them a little bit better, don't you think?
I do think so, because people are, you know, in the past, we were able, in many cases, to, you know, just focus on the work. Now I can't focus on the work solely, doing the work, are having bigger challenges. And I need to be aware of that and supportive so that we all come together and accomplish the results we're trying to accomplish.
I agree. And you know what I think we're going, again, just thinking, I think we're going to find that we each have a deeper well of caring and compassion than we even knew. It's just so easy to get caught up in, oh, I've got to get this website done. I've got to finish this bio. I'm helping this guy write a book. It's really easy to get caught up on the how-tos and the what-tos and what's on my schedule. It's different when you have to sit down and say, how are you doing? I mean, really, how are you doing? You know, what's going on? You know, you seem a little stressed. You don't seem stressed. What are you doing that's working? You know, just chat a little bit more, I think. And I think it'll be helpful for all of us.
I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. Because we are sharing this experience in many ways together. And how we do it will have very long-term implications.
I agree.
If you are a bad boss at this point, people will find ways to exit as soon as the conditions change.
Right. Man, yeah. I don't think we're through here. I'm going to have to get you to come back maybe later in the year, and we can kind of revisit, and you can tell me what you've seen about these different points that we've been talking about, if you would. Of course, I do this on the radio, so you can't tell me no. I'm tricky that way.
I will absolutely. I would love to come back. You know, and hopefully it is the next time we talk, we will be through some of the worst of the crisis.
Right.
But we'll be talking about what are we creating that is better. We thought what we were doing was really good, and here's an opportunity to do even more.
You know, how we've evolved, how we've said, you know, that used to work for me, but now I'm a slightly different person. I'm a better leader. I'm a better husband. I'm a better wife. You know, I'm walking the dog more, whatever it is. You know, they're all baby steps, but they all get us moving forward. So definitely I would love for you to come back, and we'll see kind of where we're standing and, you know, how things have shifted and changed and what is really good about it and what kind of maybe didn't work.
Thank you so much, Denise, for the opportunity. And I do look forward to talking to you soon. And I wish you great success as you navigate this in your life.
Oh, thank you so much. Listen, it's been wonderful speaking with you. And I really genuinely thank you for all the wonderful tips and advice that you've shared with our audience and the book, of course. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us. Go to iTunes or anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.